Well, hello everybody. Welcome to Sonic Talk, episode 792, recorded today on Wednesday the 6th of March, I believe it is. We're still on a bit of a high after our EMOM event, which was on Friday. Some of you will have seen the stream, some of you will have been there in person, and I want to say, fantastic as it was, I should really say, you know, the videos are going up, the individual performances are going up, we've got 360 stuff, there's stuff on Patreon and everything. I should actually say, great night, thanks to Life is Feedback, Martin Christie, Technomatic, Shaman, Caroline McClavey, Andy and Grace, Supervised Takes Tokyo, Gunboiler, and also Rich Olpin helping, Tim Dale, Sloon, of course, doing the visuals, and MIDI Error for the projections, both of them, and Claire on the doors, and Gaz for being there as well. So, yeah, do check all of that stuff out. It's well worth doing. We'll get on with the podcast in a sec. Also, this podcast is to do with the electronic music, so it's entirely pertinent. In fact, what was I going to say? Yeah, coming up, we've got a couple of things. Things I want to mention. First of all, we've got Paulie's doing a review of the Sonicware Live and Mega Synthesis. That's coming up soon. That's a real tour de force. Loads of great video toaster graphics and some fantastic music that they've done for that as well. And also, I want to mention that we've just posted. Is it this one? No, hold on. Let me find this. I'll just get this the right one. It's that one there. Coming up, and we'll do that one. And yeah, we've just posted Dom Hawkin, who the EMOMs are dedicated to. Sadly, we know he passed away. His family are moving on his musical equipment. There's a link to that. I've created a little form where you can say register your interest, and then there's a live spreadsheet which shows what's still available. But do remember, a lot of this stuff is unboxed, so it's sort of collection or difficult to ship. So do... Do treat the Margaret, who's dealing with this, with respect and courtesy, because I know she's doing her best under difficult circumstances. But the link is there, so if you want to check that out, that's great. We, in fact, I know Wagyu's bought a bunch of his synths. We bought his mic, because he had a Rode Procaster, so I'm going to put that in a little case with a plaque as a sort of, you know, just as an homage, so as a little shrine. So I think it's fitting. I don't think I want to use it. I think we'll do something. So anyway, do check that out. So on to our guests. We'll start over here with Gaz, who is in his garret in Bristol. Gaz, of course, we haven't spoken to you since Synth East. You were at Synth East. We had Robin on last week, and he told us all about it. It was really, it sounded like a great event. Let me just check your mic. You sound like I need a little bit of gain you up, actually. Have you got a couple of dibs on me? You got a couple of dBs for me?
Deep. Yeah, how's that?
That's better. Brilliant. How are you guys? You well?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you very much. Synth East was a terrific event. You know, it was like sold out, really busy. You know, I don't think you could squoze more people in there. So it was really nice. And then a lot of people, what's quite interesting with Synth East is you get a lot of people who are, you know, haven't, you know, it's their first encounters, really, especially with things like modular synths. And of course, they had the gigantic bullfrog teaching device there as well, which was really, really fun.
Oh, yes, of course. I saw that.
Mm. But I'd like to, if I may, though, just use this moment just to plug the new record label that I'm setting up. We've got a launch day for it now, a launch party. This is Arak Records that myself and Steve Davis are setting up, and so we've got an event in Bristol in the Cube Cinema, which is really, I think, one of the best venues in Bristol, on the 4th of April. Tickets available through Head First. I'll try and get that into the chat room. But yeah, so the tickets have just gone live today, and we had a meeting yesterday, and we just like sort of just formalizing everything. We've got our tagline now, which is spontaneous electronic conversations. So that's what we're intending to do with this label, which is essentially what me and Steve have been doing over the last few years. We get together and we just plug our kind of racks into each other, just, well, you know, with just a gate, so we can synchronize, and that'll be the only thing, you know, no resets or anything else, just a really simple sort of thing, and then just off we go. And what we noticed was we were having really interesting, just, you kind of find each other in this abstract sense, And I mean, I know that both Alex and Rich Nickel, who I've just given the game away, who's coming up next. Very experienced in that. So I think we wanted to kind of capture these spontaneous moments and to put them out. We really enjoy listening back to them. Now, they're not necessarily full music as you would expect. And in fact, one of the things that we're also trying to do is have the computer have the least possible impact on these recordings. So record them into a little standalone recorder, and then, you know, do a few hours of playing. And then what we'll do is we'll listen back, and then we'll have one hit at editing. And any edits that you make there and then, that's it. No going back. So almost like the edits are following the same kind of principle of spontaneous. So the computer literally is topping and tailing the recordings and being a platform for uploading. But beyond that, the computer does nothing. Yeah. So it's getting them out in as kind of raw, untouched as possible, just selections from these jams. And I know it's not the most original idea, but we want to kind of share that, really, and that's why setting up a label seemed to be the right way to do it.
Yeah, well, that sounds fantastic. So we'll put the link in. Also, we will that kind of very much continued on from what we did on Friday at the Imam. Lots of performers, lots of improvisation, lots of kind of in the moment stuff. Really good, really good. And I have to say, this Friday was particularly great. We actually had people dancing, which is the first time, the first time that's ever happened. They were in the way of the cameras and everything. It was it's a terrible nuisance.
Gun Boiler did an absolutely amazing set, and sort of I really loved that rawness, that spontaneity, and that sort of free form nature. And well, I think all the performances apart from one, which was terrible, I thought kind of had some great qualities, and it was really, really, really fun. Brilliant to see.
Yeah, excellent. Well, anyway, thanks for that, Gaz. We've also got let's go to Mylar Melodies. There we go, Alex. I guess this is your new studio, isn't it? Because I don't think you've been on since you've moved in. Nice of you to tidy up for us as well. Much appreciated.
Nick, before this call you were telling me that shallow depth of field in the background of your video is how you are getting away with not having tidied after your event.
Absolutely.
Look, this is breaking eggs to make an omelette, man. Like, I moved in and I set up kind of once, and then I've broken everything sort of down, and it's that thing like when you move into a house, you shouldn't decorate immediately or make any rash decisions about, let's knock this wall down, let's do this. You sort of have to live in a space to know where you should have everything. And so that's basically what I'm doing. This is my excuse. But I had this big table, which is going to be in part of our extension, but we're like, oh, I've got this table in the garage, I'll set it up. Way too big, didn't work. So yeah, I've been pulling things apart, trying to find new places, and I've been watching a lot of Adam Savage's Tested on YouTube. I don't know if you watch that channel, but absolutely, I love him so much. He's such a wonderful person. And so much of his channel is about kind of fettling and storage and like finding a place for things and building some custom little holder that all his his electronics bits go in and organization. And I love all that stuff. So I've kind of been, and I'm also inspired by that, Casey Neistat's video of his Casey Neistat's Wildly Functional Studio, which is all storage and everything has a place. And that is not what I have. But bit by bit, I'm going to find places. Bit by bit, I'm going to find storage. Bit by bit, I'm going to build it up and hopefully make a functional place, because I'm sick of not being able to get hold of something, reaching out and putting my hands on it. It's a problem. And for music making as well, especially, to the side of me, I've got, I've just re-got an MS-20 and I've got, the Mod Wave, and I want to have it right at hand, like just, you know, no friction, basically. This is my sort of big thing. The friction of setting anything up has been a huge issue. The whole point of this room is to make a frictionless space where I can like record videos here and, you know, and do like jams here and have, I've got a big production thing with Circlon and all 90s things here and a computer here. And I just want it to be frictionless. So it's a process.
It's hard. And I have to say, when you're working in a studio, the thing is that's fine. And I don't trust people who have everything, you know, like a kind of a drawing outline on a pegboard for of everything. Because that means you can't improvise. You can't. I need a thing. I haven't got any room for the thing because I've made this space for everything else. And there's no room left for the new thing. So how on earth do you kind of bring, oh, I've got one of these now. Where does it go? You know, that, so you have to have a certain amount of flux. I'm totally
with you. Can I ask one very quick question to the world and to the group is, what is the best way of storing cables?
Ooh.
And I mean, so that they are separated by families or in whatever hooks. Way possible. Because is it hooks, pegs, hooks, and then cable tied in loops?
Not, I think either cable tied, or having them long enough so that they can just drape. Depends how long they are, but we do them in hooks. So all the HDMI, all the XLRs. There are some great. We got some really good cable tied products on Amazon before the EMOM. These little kind of. See if I can find them. We've got trays and trays of different coloured elastic bands. We've got kind of all sorts of stuff. So, but I would go hooks because anything, once it's inside something, you have to rummage and you don't want to rummage. You just want to reach.
Rummaging.
If you want to be really posh, then Singular Sounds do these quite cool, like, spools that you put your cables in and you can kind of spool them in and then stack them up. But I think that's an expensive and posh way of doing things.
Well, and also what if you want one that's at the wrong end of the spool? Then you've got to unspool the whole lot just to get to the one at the other end. Or they've all got to be exactly the same length on the spool and then you're in trouble, you know? Then you need more spools because suddenly you've got... It's just, it's an endless... Yeah, I mean, cool basically, Alex, there's...
Too cool to spool.
It's going to be a mess, is what you're saying. Thanks, mate. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're doomed. Just get an out of focus lens, then you don't have to worry about any. That's the simplest
solution. F2.8 solves everything. Yeah, exactly. Okay, fine.
Everything below about this high, just keep out of shot, and then you just put it all on the floor. But nice for you to join us. And also, we have Mr. Richard Nicol, who's back. He loves the show so much, we can't get rid of him now. But today's a special day, of course, Richard. Pittsburgh Modular, there it is in the background. There's the Tiger keyboard, which was released yesterday, or the day before, even Monday, wasn't it? And I missed the deadline. Mine is over there somewhere, waiting to be finished. It's in a big mess that you can't see because I've got the right lens, you see. Anyway, Richard, congratulations on the launch. I love it. I think it's really interesting. Just the functionality of having something large format like this. I think I refer to the in the review. I say when the Sledge came out, which is, I know it's just a VA, it was so big and there was so much space around all the controls. It was like a sort of epiphany of synthesis control. It was like, wow, I can reach everything. There's sort of, I don't have to peer at it. It's a very different experience. Was that part of the driving force behind this?
Oh, absolutely. I've been complaining about the size of your rack since the beginning, since I started doing it. So given the opportunity to have as much space as I could have, I took it. Being able to design the case to fit what I felt was the user interface needed to be was so enjoyable. And just to say, let's use the big knobs for everything and let's give you room to reach in there. Because, you know, based on 37 keys, it was going to be big anyway. So let's make it a little deeper and go to town.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just realized I've completely misspelt that. It's three T's in Pittsburgh. That was my last minute thing. Right. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it again. Yeah, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh. Right, let's try that again. Okay, there's the link. There we go. At Pittsburgh. I think that works. Yeah, that looks right. Pittsburgh modular. There we go. So now you can see it. Yes. I don't think we're going to cover the whole thing about it because you've had. It's been great to see that all the trusted YouTubers have got their stuff.
Yeah, not me.
I just had to do the email. Alex, me and you both. We've got a messy studio. Yeah. Well,
as you can see, I've got loads of room for it.
Yeah, I think I can see it underneath that. No. But no. Congratulations, Richard. I hope the response has been good. I mean, I think it's interesting how a form factor change can completely change the perception of something, even though it's the same. I mean, there are differences. You get fine control, which is really good on those oscillators. Pitch, you know, it's a little thing. And also just accessing the digital function generator from the controls next to the keyboard, next to the pitch and mod wheel, just make everything a lot more accessible. So, you know, good job so far.
It's the form factor it was meant to be, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Gaz.
Oh, can we talk about the 24 HP panel? Because I think that's such an interesting idea.
I was going to ask what Richard's sort of top tip. Yeah. What would you pair? What do you put in the hole, as it were?
I've had a clouds in mine, but I think the key is I've got a lot of emails about this. Like, hey, I just ordered one. What should I put in there? And I really think you shouldn't put anything in there until you use Taiga for a little while. The idea is that it allows, it's not really meant to be a Eurorack case. It's meant to give you a little bit of expansion to Taiga and to allow you to add a little bit more to what's already there. So use Taiga for a while, and then you're going to say, oh, I wish it had this, or, oh, it would be nice if I could do this. And that's when you'll know what you want to add. Because I feel, you know, I'm a little biased, but I feel like Taiga has just about everything you need already. But if you want to add a reverb, or if you want to add a fourth oscillator or something like that, there's room.
Yeah. I put clouds in mine, obviously.
Well, I was going to say this is like the sort of classic modular thing. Is people, you know, fill my hole. What should I put in my hole? Puts the person on the forum. And the answer is use your system. If you use your system lots, then you should actually start to naturally find what you're missing. I mean, the only thing I was going to say, I was like, I was messaging, was like, oh, could I just make a video about the disc ding? They were like, oh, I could put a disc ding in it. I'm like, actually, you can't, because the disc ding is 2 millimeters too deep. But I have a real, like, deep cut tip, which is you can basically squeeze a couple of mil out of a case by buying M3 brass standoffs. You know, these are like little brass sort of screw-in things. If you screw those into the rails, you can literally lift a module 3 or 4 millimeters off the back plate. So that 2 mil, which would put a disc ding into the Taiga keyboard, brass standoffs, my friend, you can get on Amazon. Thanks,
excellent. Good shout. I'd
put a marbles in, I think. I think it would fit in.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Definitely. Well, there's got to be a competition in there somewhere, Richard. I think Oh, right. There's certainly a social media campaign at the very least. I think you've got a hashtag on the in the making there. So yeah. Anyway, congrats. Congrats on that. Of course, is it available now everywhere? It's $12.99 US, about $11.50 UK. Is that about right?
And it should be available everywhere now.
Okay, brilliant. It's already been shipped. Gosh, mm-hmm. It's great to have everything together and all planned, isn't it? Something I must practice sometime. Okay, right.
For synths.
Yeah. Yes, it does work for synths too. Lots of people, actually, I know Paulie uses Guitar Rig, or, you know, previously used Guitar Rig for processing synths. Really good, because you can sync all the stuff up and whatnot.
Yeah. And you can make, like, modulators that, you know, like, have LFOs and envelope followers that just make everything go, like, nuts. It's really good. I mean, I haven't used the new version, but, I mean, having used it version 5 or 6, you know, over the years, it is really good.
There you Thank go. You very much.
Sure.
I think that's what they call an endorsement.
Because it's good.
I'm still not paying you anything, but nice try.
That's fine.
Okay, right. Let's go. Well, we're talking about what you might want to put in your 24HP. How about this, DivKid?
Hello, I'm Ben, DivKid, and welcome to this video on my new module, the Output Bus. In this video, we'll highlight the issues that this module solves and the benefits of its features across different scenarios it can help you with. So let's check out what's to come.
Yeah, this is the new Output Bus. It's all part of the series of modules that Ben has done with Bafaco. And this is actually a really cool module. I mean, lots of sort of Swiss Army knife features. Summing mixer, so you've got six stereo or mono, depending on if you plug in single. You've got modular level output stereo. You've got line output on stereo. I don't know if it's balanced or not. I should check that. You've also got headphone on quarter inch, headphone on eighth inch. The last input, the summing mixer, you've got a switchable gain, and that means you can drive it hard. It's got a soft clipper, so the large, I think there's a button here, I don't know if we've got a picture of it, there's a picture of the button somewhere, yeah, so you could drive it seems to do an awful lot of things, and it works really well with the stereo channel the stereo strip, I think that you also
stereo
did.
Strip
Stereo strip. I mean, I'm not a modular person, but I'm almost thinking I should get one of these just for that. Gaz, I see you're holding up both of said things. So I guess you could make a pretty full-featured mixer out of all of this stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you had multiple stereo strips, which I'm really tempted to do now, to feed in. I mean, there's one thing that, my goodness, how cool is this? Your headphone output comes on big and mini. How much of my life has been just tormented with that dilemma?
Having the wrong one.
The wrong one.
And, worse the €211 Euros alone, eh?
Yeah. But you can use both. You can use both at the same time as well. So it does give you another output there. But yeah. I mean, I think this is the thing, really. Stereo it's not new in Eurorack now, but it was something that, obviously stereo doubles up all the channels, so you end up using up or being really short of stereo inputs, really. And I found this to be the case, a real... decentralized mixing. You've got little mixes here and there, and then, you know, so just to be able to bring them all together, I think is a really fabulous thing. And the way I'm going to use this is a way to sort of join a bunch of my different cases together. So they'll all come in.
Right,
and then
makes sense.
Some in, yeah. But a 7-segment VU as well, which is really handy on your output as well. So, yeah, and I think they are balanced. I'm pretty sure they are.
Ah, right. Makes sense. You know, makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's and if you look, every single bit of space.
8 HP as well. It's an impressive piece of work. And it's like, I mean, Ben's been making modules with Bafaco for a little while, and they're just sort of getting more and more tightly focused. And they all seem to feel, I mean, I don't know if you've reviewed or had your hands on one of these. I'm sure you, oh yeah, there we go. Essential part of any case. There we go.
It's actually attached to my body at the waist. It's there, isn't it? Yeah, so... Yeah. I've got one of these as well, which, as Gaz was saying, the whole decentralized mixer thing is actually what I'm doing in this case, because I really like the Hex mix and the Hex bander that Bafaco make, but it is very big. And so the fact is, when you like downsize, quote unquote, to 104.6 HP, then you're like, well, I need to squeeze things in. So the decentralized mixer is, you know, you create, for example, here is a send. You multi-signal and you have the fully wet signal going into your effect. And then you need to sum the dry signal with the fully wet signal with something. So that's basically what this does. It lets you sort of collapse everything back together before going to house. And it's the other thing is just the simple fact of like monitoring, you know, needing headphones. Like when we played at Synth East, I played with Steve Davis, and And there was one wedge between me and Steve. Well, actually, it was to my right, so it wasn't even between us. And so I just thought, well, actually, I haven't tried this, but you possibly can drive two headphones. Ben was like, yeah. I'm not really tested it, but you might be able to drive two headphones, you know, if they're similar kind of ohmage, so that two people may, because we've not tested, but may be able to listen to the same thing. And monitoring when you're on stage is such an absolute nightmare. And it's like, it really winds me up. That's why obviously a lot of bands use in-ears and things, because they're just so sick of relying on wedges. And, you know, you just need to know that when you go to a venue, you've got consistent sound. And it's never truer with modular, but it's also made doubly hard because headphone, I mean, this is the thing, headphone, you know, listening on headphones is not the same as what is coming out of the speakers as well. So it can be, it's not the only answer. But yeah, this whole thing of being able to have lots of smaller mixers, do all your submixing, create sends, I think is actually more of the spirit of modular than just buying a thing that is effectively like a little Mackie mixer that just happens to fit inside a Urac case. So I think it's interesting. This is the sort of, and as Ben says in the video, like, you know, if you use the stereo strips and stuff, you could have automated panning and automated volumes and start thinking more modularly. You know, like Doc Brown, think more four-dimensionally, is you need to think more modularly and build your own weird mixer that works exactly the way that you want it to work. You know, isn't that the point? Not to just sort of ingest someone else's idea of a mixer. It should be your own weird, niche, personal mixer friend that does exactly what you want. And it would be the output chain for that.
I have no need for this, but I have an increasingly stronger desire just to build a mixer out of those stereo strips and maybe a couple of output buses, just because it looks really nice. I think they've done a great job on that as well. But that sort of level of utility, it's the sort of final piece of the chain, isn't it, for many modular, that kind of whole output. So mixing and being able to mix is really hard to achieve. That's why most people have breakout boxes or breakout mixers and sort of have that as an extra performance thing, but you can keep it all in the box. It's cool though, Rich, right?
Oh, this is really cool. Any small utility module like this that solves a problem is fantastic. And this does it really well because people don't like to use a whole lot of space on mixers. What they want to do is have these crazy oscillators and filters and effects, but they don't want to have utility modules taking up a whole lot of space. So this allows you to have an end game where you can pull a little bit from this and a little bit from that and pull it all together. I think it's really well thought out and really well done. This is going to solve a myriad of problems for a lot of different people. And I think that's, like you said, the spirit of modular, where this can be used in a lot of different ways by a lot of different people. And, it's going to solve a little bit different problem for everybody, but it does it really, really well, which is nice.
Yeah, I thoroughly recommend you watch the full DivKid video because he goes through a lot of use cases. I mean, things like being able to send to an effects unit and then have the effects unit come in via the summing, because then you can just have a fully wet signal and just kind of set the level of the return so that just stuff like that. I mean, the idea of a summing mixer is actually very cool, and it is summing. It's not kind of, you're not getting that weird stuff where you get strange kind of, I don't know what it is, resistance or where things get quieter or louder depending on what you got plugged in. It's a great idea. And also the clipping sounds quite nice, the soft clipping. 211 euros, built 157 as a DIY. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it just seems to be a very useful thing. So good one, Ben. I thought you might want to come on and talk about it, but I think everybody's done a great job of explaining that as well. So fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Let's see what's next. Gosh, there's again, it seems as weeks go on, we seem to have more and more software. Software seems to be a growing area of growth in music technology. And I can see why, because making hardware is difficult. It's fraught with kind of supply issues and components and all of the kind of stuff that probably keeps you awake at night, Rich. So that's why we've got some more software. So let's have a look which one we got. I think we might go for... I don't know whether I... Yeah, I'm going to go for this. This was on last week. There's the Newtone Morpho. This was a video I made last when I was going to have it on. And one applies to the other. It's sort of a bit like vocoding, but obviously it's not that. It's a bit cleverer than that. It's called Neutromofo, it's currently in beta, but they're training, it's AI trained on it, but what's really interesting, they've specifically mentioned that they do not use any copyrighted materials for model training, which I think is a really big issue for any kind of AI, any kind of neural networking, particularly when it comes to music, and we see it happening a lot in music and literature, where people go, well, you've summarized my book, so that means you must have ingested it, you know, so these things are important to a lot of people. It reminds me a little bit, there's a thing called Krotos, which is a sound effects generator where you have a set of Foley, and you watch a video and you use your mouth to kind of place the points at which you want those things, and it selects the amplitude. And so it's similar, it feels like it's almost like a vocoding thing, but obviously it's not doing that. This looks like an interesting thing, but again, we don't know how much it's going to be. It's free at the moment. I'm guessing subscription, everybody goes subscription, which would be disappointing, but I suppose because it's got to be online connected to a server probably to find the stuff, the imprints and the whatever it needs. Just thought it was kind of an interesting idea. What do you think?
I actually downloaded it and tried it. Yeah, I mean, this is the benefits of being free to just do these things in the day, as I now am like self-employed. Yeah, it is cool. It's sort of, I tried it, I downloaded it. And effectively, as you say, vocoder, I think, is a really good analogy, because a vocoder basically takes, you know, one sound and sort of presses it, you know, like my son has those little like things that you can squidge Play-Doh through a shape. It's effectively squidging Play-Doh through a shape. But it's adding all of this extra detail. It's like a sort of, to make it like
dynamic detail, yeah.
It's like I was going to make a really weird animation analogy, which is like, you know, in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Jessica Rabbit's dress is like, they've actually like filmed a sort of sparkle thing, and and she's like this sort of stencil it's showing through. Really weird analogy, but those who love Who Framed Roger Rabbit will understand what I mean. And basically what I found was that if you put like tuned information in, like if you play in like a flute riff, what it doesn't do is it doesn't respect the pitch of the flute riff. It's sort of like the stencil, it just shows you, it creates this sort of texture that sort of sticks to your riff but is not pitched to follow it, if that makes sense. It's not, so you don't like put in a flute and then put it on like choir mode and you get like a choir, you get a sort of weird atonal fluty choir. But what it did do, I mean, what I was struck by is it was making insanely weird textural stuff that reminded me of sort of like Flying Lotus and like, you know, some of this really like very forward textural like electronic music where it's mad sample collage, you know, tons of layers of things all mushed together and smashed and compressed. And what I did think, I was like, well, yeah, it isn't pitched, but, you know, if you just sampled some notes, you could then use that and put that into a sampler and then pitch it from then on. And you could, so as a sort of sound design tool, it does seem really cool. And it doesn't just sort of magically spit out immediately tuneful results, but it was certainly making things that I've never heard before. So that's
pretty
cool.
Which is never a bad thing in many ways. And I guess at the moment it is free. It's just, you know, I guess when it says the copyright material, you know, we're not using copyright material, but I mean, essentially by participating in a beta program, you're sort of doing that yourself, you know, you're providing some of it, which is, you know, the deal that we often have to do. Any interest of this? I mean, I imagine in a module it might be interesting. Take two inputs and have a third one out with a knob in the middle to select stuff. We're not far off this anyway, are we, really? This probably is going to be happening quite soon when we get DSP, non-specific DSP modules.
I mean, I'm just a little bit baffled about what to use it for. I mean, other than having a laugh with it, you know, or just, it definitely looks good to,
it's like face swap. Is it, do you think it's a face swap scenario where it's great? You take it, you show it to people at a party and everybody goes, oh, that's brilliant. And then you never use it again after three rounds of hysterics. That's it. It's done.
Yeah. I think sadly, I kind of feel a little bit like that. Although, I mean, it does look like, you know, really good fun. I mean, so if you took a, like a stem of like, you know, these, you know, of a famous vocal and put it through it. I wonder, you know, with copyright, what sort of happens if, what happens with the outcome then? So if you put copyrighted material into it.
Well, this is, yeah, this is the...
So I think the thing is you have to download their, like, material. So that's the thing, like, you go into it and you log in, you create an account, and then you actually download packs. So there's, like, 120 meg little... And the pack is, like, sitar, or the pack is, like, alien choir. And then you apply alien choir. So it's an audio effect that's... That, so you have to use their material that's, like... calibrated and trained, the algorithm that's trained on. You can't just put your own stuff in and convolve it to something else.
Okay.
I mean, but, you know, as we know, to make a large language... I've been looking into this because I think I want to make a large language module of the entire body of Sonic State, all the news, everything. So I've got it to use myself, you know, for us. You know, we can use it for in our own AI, an expert, effectively. And I need about 750 gigs of RAM... and a kind of, I don't know, a 64-core GPU to effectively build the analysis of that data.
Nick, so, DigiNick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, it's not. It's the voice. You know, so all of our news items, maybe the transcripts of all of our videos, all goes in there, and then it just we can ask it questions, and we can maybe get it to transcribe videos based on the knowledge that it knows about the music tech world that we've provided it with, and then we own that language model. We're not giving it to somebody else, because that's eventually going to be a thing, I think. I don't know, interesting. Rich, what do you think? Is this a, I mean, I guess as an analog engineer, does this sort of stuff interest you, or do you kind of tend to keep away from it?
No, this is fascinating to me. I kind of feel like this particular, the Newton Morpho, kind of sounds like the first generation of AI image generators looked. Like, it's really rough around the edges, but this is it's a fascinating new type of synthesis that I think a year or 2 years down the road is going to yield some really, really interesting results. This is sort of dipping our toes and seeing what the future is going to have. It's not there yet. But you get a glimpse of what it can do. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting in the future. Not quite yet, though.
Have we not seen this before with the Hartman neuron, which basically was doing something similar? And obviously not working with large language modules or any analytical data, but it was, you know, for all the world, it did sound like a crossfade. It wasn't actually a crossfade. It was something else. I don't know. And I'm not sure. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's nearly but not quite. And I guess if you want to try it, it might be useful for a project that you're working on. And, you know, it makes kind of sense. So I'm glad I got that off of my system. Anyway.
I also love
Okay,
RX-10.
Right. RX-10 is marvelous.
I will seriously, I cannot stress enough how much that piece of software has saved my life from about, I've had it since like version 5. And as anyone who makes videos knows, it's like, oh, I screwed up. And then that's the thing that fixes it. Actually, I just released a podcast with Everything, the Why We Bleep podcast, which of course you should go and listen to. Go and subscribe to Why We Bleep. And there's a fun conversation with Everything. You've just released an album. And one of the callers, Jonathan Higgs, is the singer, was phoning, like, he was based, he's in Manchester, and so he was calling, and he had, like, one of those headsets with a little mini mic, so he sounded really thin, very close, but very thin. And I used the spectral recovery thing in RX to, like, add the, like, body of his voice back in, and it's like, I actually had a comment from Chris Midiera, who was like, Jonathan Higgs' speaking voice is just as wonderful as his singing voice. And I didn't have the heart to say. I was like, I actually used a bit of spectral recovery there, so I haven't over-egged him a little bit. But it is a wonderful, wonderful life-saving thing. So, yeah, another shill for your excellent sponsors.
Well, pretty soon we're going to be able to just, well, it doesn't matter. You'll just transcribe it into text and then have another voice re-speak it.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll have his own voice that he can say, oh, yeah, I'll send you the model of my voice.
Yeah, I want Nick to speak all my videos, please.
I'd like it if you had a control called egginess, and then, you know, it would alert when you over-egged it, sort of.
Less egg, more egg. Yeah, that's a good thought. Yeah. Oh, that wasn't a topic, was it? That was an ad. But thank you very much for that. Yeah, well, let's have a look. I guess we haven't had any Jacob Collier in our lives for a little while, so I think I'm going to. I'm just going to press the button, and we'll have him.
The Collier button.
What's up, everybody? My name is Jacob Collier. This is Jethro the Crocodile, and we are here today to introduce to you the Jacob Collier Audience Choir instrument. So I've spent the last few years touring all around the world, playing shows in all corners of the globe. Not that there are many corners, but that's another story. One of my favorite parts of the whole experience has been the ever-expanding evolution of the audience choir. So the idea that I stand at the front of the stage and I conduct my audience polyphonically across many different chords, scapes, keys, and sound worlds.
And then you make a free instrument with Native Instruments Contact, which it's got, I'm trying to figure out whether or not he, and I suspect because he's got the brain the size of a planet and he probably had this all planned out from the first gig, but I'm guessing there's probably a lot of RX in this because I can't imagine the difference. I mean, it sounds like an old school Fairlight sample, you know, like one of those kind of like, oh, you know, or a Mirage. I mean, it's really interesting. It's only, it's 190 meg, so it's not, but it's like samples from everywhere. There's some clever stuff in there, and it's kind of, it, but it has a real, it has that real kind of, it's the sound of Blue Monday, isn't it? It's kind of, except polyphonically.
Well, it kind of, I thought it sounded quite hyper. I also downloaded it and tried it as well, just because I do love choir samples, especially, and yeah, especially I love mellotrons and the sort of orchestron choirs and all of the, you know, Kraftwerkian sort of, you know, things. and basically, it sounds quite high fidelity because it's in stereo, I think.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, it wasn't as lo-fi, but obviously there are tools to lo-fi things. But it, yeah, it is an for a free thing, it's super cool. I mean, it's free. We cannot, like, we can't sort of pick it apart. But I love a lo-fi tape choir, but you could certainly use one to make it. And I did try, you can basically blend between oohs and mms, and you can add release and add attack, so you can make the choirs kind of swell into life in a very kind of pleasing way. And as sample material, it's, you know, taking human voices and pitching and playing them across the keyboard is always just a delightful time. So it's cool that they've done it.
It's a great concept as well. I love the way that when you play, it sort of shows you which city those notes have been taken from. Nice. I mean, it's completely pointless. There's absolutely no need for it whatsoever to do that. But I really like the idea. And Jacob is such a sort of fantastically enthusiastic and brainy fellow. It's sort of, I can't figure out whether or not I would want to be stuck in the back of a van with him on a European tour, or whether I would, and it would be amazing, you know, or whether I'd want to kill him after, you know, after 6 weeks. I don't know.
He seems very genuine and lovely, so I think fair play to
definitely.
Him. And it's an insane musician to the point where I'm like, terrifying. I'm like a rabbit in the headlights, but it's maybe not the music I would choose to listen to, but I think it's free, this thing, so you've really got no reason not to give it a whirl.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Have you ever seen Jacob Collier, Gaz?
Yeah, well, actually, funnily enough, you know, I've been part of the choir, you know,
nice.
And what was really cool story, I think, though, was he was performing in Bristol and we were all waiting for the show to begin. And then he came on stage and he said, that's right, the power went down. And he came on stage and said, I'm really sorry, we're going to have to cancel the concert because there's a power outage. And it wasn't just affecting the venue, it was the whole sort of little area there in Bristol was affected by it. So there was this girl who's in front of me, a teenager, who had been waiting and waiting and waiting, so excited. So she was in floods of tears. And it was really disappointing. So I went out and went up to the multi-story car park. I actually I live streamed this, so it is still on my channel. And outside the tour bus, we heard a bit of a commotion. We looked down from the multi-story car park and Jacob was doing a concert, a spontaneous improvised concert, just acoustically. And then the audience all sort of formed a semicircle around him. And I thought, wow, now that was so brilliant to see him do that. And then, so where are all the people going? The power came back on and the concert actually Oh, but I was going to say, when I saw him doing that and he was playing to that audience, I could see that girl who'd burst out crying. I could see her right in the front, having a little personal concert in the street. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. And then, you know, and then the power came back on and he went back on and the show actually happened. But I thought that just showed such great character for him to do that little street improvised concert. And very few artists, I think, would have had the gumption or the talent to be able to do that. But what I was going to say, though, what Jacob has done over the past few years is he's released a series of albums called Jesse, and Volume 4 has just come out. And like the different ones out of the series have focused on different areas of his music. And this most recent album that's just come out is, in fact, made up entirely, you know, from the audience choirs. So really, this free instrument really, in a way, is a trailer, I suppose, but, you know, for his new album. But I think with it being a free instrument, again, just speaks of his generosity of spirit.
It's spelled DJ, I think it's D-J-E-S-S-E, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So volume four is, yeah, so...
So do you like you some free stuff there, Richard? Are you going to be allocating 190 megabytes of your precious storage for some choir samples?
I did download this and I played with it a little bit last night, and it's very interesting. I immediately hooked it up to my MPC and started chopping up the samples as I was playing them into the MPC. And that was a lot of fun. I think of things like this sort of as raw material that I can start to create some really big textures with. And then I did, I also dumped it into the trial of that lo-fi driver because I like the idea that lo-fi choir as well. And I think these are recorded beautifully, and because you can shape it, you can create sort of these really interesting textures, again, that I immediately chopped and destroyed in the MPC. But what a fun plugin. Really, really great.
Yeah, nice. I don't know. I didn't make a note of the specifications and whatnot because, I imagine it's a contact instrument. I would assume
it is
a contact-based instrument. Yeah. So it's a contact player that you need for that and all of those things. But yeah, nice. Anyway, there's a thing. excuse me. We haven't got that many topics left, actually, which is a good job, as there's only 10 minutes left in the show, unless we improvise ourselves. I wouldn't put myself up to the ability of improvising to the level of Jacob Collier on multiple instruments, but I'll have a go at improvising a button press. I think that's about as much as I can manage. So let's do that. This is sort of the other end of the scale.
Hi, I'm Moby, and this is a multi-track breakdown for this, of how to play my song Extreme Ways. First, drums. Second, bass.
Right, we'll probably get busted for copyright, but anyone who watched this will have noticed that pretty much all of the signals that he recorded, these are not what's happening in the multitrack, by the way, were distorted. He'd taken absolutely no care whatsoever on the input signal. The bass was distorted, and it was that preamp distortion. It wasn't nice distortion, and same with the guitar. And this isn't a criticism. It was just I quite like the fact that that might have been there on the original, and it sort of doesn't matter because this was from the 2016 album, so it was after his kind of massive eponymous hit where it was just like every single sync was a Moby track. I think Gulf Rap took over after that for a little while, but this is from the 2016 album 18, which sold 4 million copies, so you know, fair enough. I like the fact that he didn't, it was still a bit broken and distorted, and that kind of made me feel warmed, because I think Moby can be one of those Marmite type of artists, isn't he? It's a bit like Ed Sheeran. Some people love him, some people hate him. And it sort of made me like him more somehow, because he just didn't care. Yeah. Or maybe he did. Maybe it was all done for effect.
Yeah, and, you know, he's somebody who's been quite hard to pinpoint over the years, because his career has been quite sort of chameleonic, I suppose. And sort of seeing him sort of go between the different instruments is quite, you know, insightful into his working process. And that little demo is quite interesting because all the parts are pretty standard things that he plays. Yeah, but then it all comes together, and you go, and you kind of go, "Oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense." So yeah, I was a little bit underwhelmed with it, but I enjoyed it. But yeah, he's somebody who's never really floated my boat. But I'd be interested.
Much of his kind of big stuff was kind of basically cut ups and samples, wasn't it? Yeah. It's interesting though, isn't it? What you were saying about the multitrack. I mean, this is, we've talked about this before, where you know occasionally classic multitracks from classic tunes are released, and you hear the individual parts, and you're going, "How on earth did that sound that way from these things? I don't understand how it got to where it was. It mixed magic, or is it just some of this sort of fairy dust that happened afterwards?" It's curious, isn't it?
And this definitely does that, because when it comes together, it does sound really quite big and quite exciting. I'd be interested I think I've probably missed some gems in his back catalogue, so I'd appreciate if anyone does have a Moby recommendation for me to check out to discover his genius. Please go ahead and let me know.
It's like that meme, isn't it? It's kind of the person sitting in the park with the table, like the Charlie Brown table.
Oh, yeah.
Moby is a genius. Convince me. You know, it's that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
I know. That's good. Richard, I mean, I think... I mean, it was so big, his kind of... I can't remember what that first album was called, but it was absolutely everywhere, wasn't it? Yeah, Play, that's right. And it was just... I mean, he must have been quite a shock, because people are saying in the chat room, I mean, he was kind of a punky dude, you know, that's when he first started. And he just became this immensely successful, almost overnight. I can't remember what the breakout was. It was a single, and then it was probably synced on films and hit TV. So it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And as we know, the power of the brand sort of is self-perpetuating in a way. So it's very interesting. But multitracks, how do you feel about them?
I think that this was really cool to watch. Anytime you get to watch an incredibly talented musician sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of just sort of going through the motions and making it look impossibly easy to record these really good songs, I find it's fascinating. It's almost like a flex how little he seemed to be trying, and to get the results that he gets. I find that stuff endlessly fascinating. I could watch videos of people making tracks all day long. I find it, I'm not very good at making music. So to watch people that are very good at it, it's inspiring for me to say, no, look, it's not that hard. I can just, you know, I could put a track together, and I like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, there's that whole thing, it's like self-filtering, isn't it? You just go, yeah, that's good, that's not good. People who can make quick decisions, I think, and probably, I like to think maybe that's the way he works, where he just goes, yep, that's fine, this is it, it's all going in the right direction, this is good, rather than endlessly, like the most of us, just sort of editing the decay on the hi-hat and then changing it all up. I mean, you know, we... I wasn't looking at you. Yeah, but you do stuff. You know, your improvisations, or you make it look very easy.
I did the decay on the hi-hat.
It
was interesting to see, because as Gaz says, like when you listen to all the parts individually, as you say, like they sound a bit crunchy and they don't sound all that amazing. But suddenly, when all the layers are put together into a song, then it actually is like, oh, it's a nice piece of music. This is a nice song. And it's the power of a good song, you know, and it's just individually, the parts don't sound remarkable, but as the ensemble. Also, it's that thing of seeing the layers. And if you think carefully and critically, you see how, you know, what is the contribution each one of those, the bass, the drums, the Rhodes, the like guitar, the vocals, where they all sit in the arrangement, they all have a part to play to make it, which is all very obvious. Obviously, that's how bloody music works. But it's just nice to see, you see it, and you're like, okay, well, that's where that lives, and that's how that works. And it's, yeah, he is a divisive musician. He went from nothing to meteoric. Actually, I just pulled up the Wikipedia page for Play, because obviously it was like, yeah, it was 1999. I remember it, I had it. And what is interesting is when Play was first released, he says he like played in the basement of Virgin Megastore and 40 people came, and it was it underperformed. No one was interested. And then they started signing licensing deals for it to put, you know, get the music in ads and get the music in TV, and did them at a very low cost, I think. He was like, oh, we didn't make loads of money, but we did it to get the album out there. And so it was originally released in like...
Yeah.
I mean, and like the eight, it says eight singles were released from Play in 1998. But then by the year 2000, October, then other singles were still being released, re-released. So it was first released in 98, and even by late 2000, they were still releasing singles from Play that were like each one performing better than the last. The first six all reached the top 40. So it's mad. Yeah, it speaks to the power of repetition. Like I heard, it was an audiobook, basically, but it was talking about Hey Ya, the Outkast song. And it was talking about the fact that when it was first released, there is basically a process that promoters take the way it works is that if you just play Hey Ya on its own, it's too weird a song. It was not like other pop songs at the time, so people didn't accept it. And so what they did, and there's a name I forget, it's like sandwiching or something like this. And what they do is they take two very popular songs and then they stick Hey Ya in the middle of them, so that the popularity of these two songs kind of buoys up this new
rubs
song.
Off. Yeah.
And by repeating this cycle, you eventually get the audience to accept Hey Ya and to want it. And then Hey Ya then goes on slowly and bit by bit. It builds up steam as it gets played and played and played and becomes an absolute like juggernaut and becomes like the biggest single of the year. But that doesn't just happen magically. It happens through sneaky, careful repetition and drip feeding and systems to make people's brain not reject Hey Ya, and I think a similar sort of thing happened with
Moby. But I mean, actually, Hey Ya is it's got 15/8 section, hasn't it? Which is something people don't always remember. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's really cool that there is a non-standard time signature in there. You know, it's always good to hear those. That's a fascinating point about that whole thing. And yes, by the same token, I think it was Azia had said that, you know, of all the 90s sample artists, he was sort of the laziest, because essentially he mined acapellas and he found acapella phrases, and that by repetition, he took other people's melodies and turned them into sort of big hits by doing the backing track under it, which... It's not the first time that happened, because I don't know if you remember the first Massive Attack album was exactly the same. It was all acapellas that were taken, because I remember at the time, you know, I was remixing, and this isn't a criticism, it's just what the public wanted, and but you could only buy these Acapellas Anonymous tracks, albums. They came in volumes. You could buy them in record stores in New York. So people who could get to New York or get hold of the imports would get these acapellas. And that's exactly, and we had the same record that they had. And there was one of those volumes that was basically every single track on one of the sides was a Massive Attack track, you know, or some element of it. And I think Moby probably just was a bit more selective about where he got those things, because there were some really nice baritone vocalists. I seem to remember, why does my heart? It's like and it wasn't all sort of wailing soul divas stuff. It was really interesting. So, I mean, it's fascinating that, but you're right about the whole repetition and the way of doing it. It's just an interesting way. And it's like, is it less valid? No, it's a clever, it's like gaming the system, isn't it? Just going, this is what you need to do.
And the song never changed.
KLF did the same. Yeah.
The song was never broken. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, fascinating. Okay. Well, actually, I managed to make that last a bit longer than that. So we made it to 5 o'clock, which is good. So, Gaz, are you streaming tonight? Are you back on the live streams, or are you...
I'm going to have to change my live stream date, I think. I've got a weekly event that's kind of clashing with the Wednesday night, so I'm not quite sure what slot is available, but I'd really like to get back to it, but I've been doing all this other thing on Wednesday night, so unfortunately not tonight.
Fair enough.
Soon. Yeah, so if, anyone's got any ideas when's a good time slot that doesn't clash with everybody else, either. Really,
we should ask Wagyu, because Wagyu basically moderates all of the live streams.
Wagyu, yes.
For which we are endlessly thankful. Thank you, Wagyu. And also thank you for the Imom, because he was part of the production team and was able to send us feedback. It was like, Nick, your mic's too quiet or whatever it was. So it was really helpful having an off-site monitor on that whole thing. So big shout out to Wagyu once again. Ask him, I suppose is what I would say, Gaz. But we'll look out for your next live stream. But thank you. And of course, there's your event.
Yeah, the launch. Yeah, the 4th of April in the Cube. Tickets went live today. So there's not an awful lot of tickets. So if you fancy coming along, please grab one. It's going to be great.
Excellent. And Mr. Mylar Melodies there. What's next on your agenda? Are you on eBay looking for depth of field lenses, or are you going to be videoing?
Eternally, Nick. That and like weird watches. Just got a new. Always looking for watches. So if anyone's got any nice Casio G Shocks in you. I've just published a new podcast, Why We Bleep, with Everything.
Yes,
I'm going to shamelessly plug again. Please listen to that, because it is, I love that band. They're absolutely amazing. I saw them play at the Brudenell Social Club here in Leeds the other night. They're amazing. They're sort of, how do you even describe, they're a band, but they have this incredibly, unbelievably earwormy, catchy sort of songwriting methodology. They're so good. And the lead singer has this kind of, he has a very unique kind of amazing way of singing. It's like falsetto, but as I discovered in the podcast with them, it's like falsetto that he blends with metal screamo, which makes it sound like it might be quite aggro, but it's actually really melodic. So he does these incredibly complex, fast, interesting melodies that he's singing halfway house between rap and singing, and it's really good. I would strongly recommend that you listen to Everything and the Wide Minute podcast. I've also got a new video with I did a demo of the Disting, and I'm just finishing a demo of the Dreadbox telepathy bundle, which is this sort of Dreadbox did the sixth voice polysynth, which is really interesting. It's sort of the fun of kind of doing this job of doing demos, is you get to try something out, and understand what makes it tick and what makes it good and great. And it's quirky, it has, menus and this some shared controls. It's not as obviously as immediate as just a Juno 60 or something. But the upshot is that you've got six voice multi-timbral polyphony, and it has this amazing output module called the Psychosis, where really simple idea, but you've got six inputs and you just turn this dial and there's a built-in LFO that just swirls all six inputs around the stereo field in time with the LFO. You imagine that's such a simple idea, but it really sounds great, because it just animates, it makes everything kind of auto pan in a lovely way. And you imagine if you've got six analog voices all going at once, all being auto pan, then it's some real good headphone times to be had. So there'll be a video on that. Subscribe to Mylar Melodies on the YouTube if you don't already, please. Thank you very much.
Exactly. You should do that. And of course, you're welcome anytime. So jump in whenever you have a free moment. And of course, thanks, Richard Nicol, congratulations on the release of the Tiger keyboard. I'm guessing, you could sit back and see what great music is made with it, and what everybody does. And I will get my review done soon, I promise. Lovely to have you. Do you take a break now, or are you on to the next product?
I start filming demo videos for the next product tomorrow. We have another thing that we're going to come out with at Super Booth this year, so I have to get all my marketing materials ready in advance. But I think today I'm going to take a nap and then go into the shop late, catch up with the team, and move on from there. I still have my Tiger keyboard behind me. I'll probably end up pulling that out this evening and have a play with it. But it's relaxation day
Nice.
At Pittsburgh Modular.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, thank you, everybody. Nice to see all you folks in the chat room. I see Superfrog Saves Tokyo in there as well. Great set from him.
Great set.
And Andrew Brooks is there. There's a whole bunch of people there. And I should point out, if anybody does actually want to perform at the EMOM, we've just got a form. I mean, I know it's not a sort of rock up and play, but what I do is I take all the submissions and I basically just try and build a bill out of it that has some sort of cohesion. So it doesn't matter what your level of expertise is. I'll click that. So that should go in. So, oh, no, that's not it. It's this one, isn't it? It's this one. Sorry. Which is... Oh, God, I'll press it. It will go into Sonic Performer. Yeah, the link went in there. So fill the form in. It'll just end up in there and we can get some more going because we're already starting to think about the next one. Even though about 10 to 7 on EMOM prep night, I was thinking, I'm never doing this again. My head is going to explode. I can't face it. But we're thinking about maybe getting a different venue which has got installed PA, installed lights. So that will kind of take some of the load off, hopefully. But we'll see. Depends whether we can make it work out. But I want to say thank you very much to all our guests. Lovely to have you all. A great afternoon of talking tech once again. See you all next time. That's it for Sonic Talk number 792. Gosh, there's loads of it, isn't there? See you later. Bye-bye now.